My name is Mike E. Smith. Time and country was October 65 through November 66. I was a motor transport mechanic, but I was attached to headquarters in Charlie Company tanks. And I helped them on the tanks when I could. And so.
Okay. Let's start out. How did you get into tanks?
That's where they sent me.
Okay. Were you drafted or did you sign up?
I signed up.
Was this after, how old were you?
19.
You were 19.
Signed up when I was 19 and went to boot camp San Diego in November of 64. So when I got out of boot camp, my duty station was Camp Pendleton. So I reported to Camp Pendleton and was attached to a comm battalion, and that was in March of 65. Of course, March of 65, Marines landed in Red Beach in Da Nang there. So part of that comm battalion that I was attached to, they went on to Vietnam. So then they sent me to school. I got out of school, and then they had moved to 29 Palms. So 29 Palms is middle of the desert. So I just said, nah, I said, volunteer, you know, get me out of here and going to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So I got there October 65 and was attached to H&S Company, 3rd Tank Battalion.
What was the mechanic school like?
It was just regular, like, second echelon mechanic work, you know, you could do it about anything except rebuild. Of course, Vietnam, we did everything, so.
Do you have any stories about a really difficult repair or rebuild that you had to do?
Well, we were up on the DMZ, and the tanks had gone out on a sweep, and they had the radio jeep with them. So I got a call back at where we were. I was with Charlie Company then. I went back to where they called back there and said, we got a jeep out there that won't run. So anyway, I end up grabbing my toolbox and my rifle, go out there and checked it over. Okay, it was a fuel pump. So I called back, and they sent out a fuel pump. You know, it wasn't difficult to fix, but it was just, you know, and I was out there with them for 3 days with a toolbox and a rifle. You know, when you're out in the field, you have no sleeping facilities, and, you know, it's all sea rations.
Did you have any mechanical experience before?
Just my own cars. All of us that grew up in the 50s and 60s, we all tinkered with cars because it was easy. I mean, easier than now. You know, now you open a hood and you go, I don't know what's going on.
Did you also work on Ontos?
No. When I got to headquarters, 3rd Tanks, Ontos was there. Headquarters, Ontos, and Amtrak's. Up around the same hill. But like I say, when I got to Vietnam, there were, I think at that time, it was only 190,000 troops. And we landed in Da Nang, and Da Nang was, it wasn't spread out much yet. There weren't a lot of, well, we didn't have much of anything. You know, we ate with sea rations. So I spent from October to March 66. So the mechanic rotated back to the States. It was down at Chulai at Charlie Company tanks. So they sent me down there to replace him. I flew down there on 130 out of Da Nang. So we got down there and we were there for 2 days and they were loading everything up. So we got on a ship there and went up the coast to Dong Ha. Or no, not, no, Fubai. And we set up at the end of the strip that had an airstrip of Fubai. So we were kind of set out away. Tanks were support, kind of keep everybody from the airstrip. That was what, March of 65. So we stayed there until September of 66. So then we left there and convoyed up from Fubai up through Wei City, Dong Ha, up to Cam Lo. And like I say, back in, Dong Ha, they barely had an airstrip then. And in fact, when we were there, they were just putting the matting down on the airstrip. They couldn't land jets there. It was a short strip. So we went up to Dong Ha, or no, past Dong Ha, up Cam Lo. And we got up there. I think we were with, I think 114 was up there. I can't remember exactly. Anyway, we were up there and they come around and said, okay, everybody dig in. So the tanks would set up and then the support guys would man, we'd have to dig a little hole between the tanks. So, you know, we dug down, you know, about 2 sandbags deep and had 2 sandbags up. You know, he said, "Man, well, nothing going to happen." But about 1:30 in the morning, we got overrun by 2 companies, NVA regulars. I mean, it was like during the whole battle, it was like it wasn't even real. It was like a movie. So, you know, people firing and Puff came over, started shooting these guns and dropping flares, kind of light up the area. And I'd never seen Puff before, and I wouldn't want to be in his, you know, rifle sight. But anyway, that happened in, I think it was up to about 6 in the morning, they were starting to retreat. And it had been, you know, pretty dark. So they were retreating, and we were down below these mountains. And F-4s, you could hear them coming, or couldn't hear them coming. You could see them over the horizon coming. They were dropping napalm. And they come right over the top of us, and you couldn't hear the jet. You could just hear the canister of napalm just whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And they made a couple of runs at that, and then, you know, everybody got kind of where they'd get up and get out of a hole and see what was going on, and there were bodies laying everywhere. I think we lost 6 men, and I know we killed 20 NVA inside the perimeter, and it wasn't that big of a perimeter because it was just a makeshift. I think they had just pulled 1 strand of concertina wire out around there. So, but then we had to police up the bodies and go through the bodies and get any maps or in weapons and put them someplace else. So we got that and had a Jeep and a trailer and just put the bodies in the trailer. And one of the tanks had a blade on the front called Blade Tank, and it went in and dug out a big hole. Just took them over, I think had 35 of them, laid them in the hole and covered them up. So I don't know if I could ever find that spot, you know, but they also, when they came in, they were had satchel charges, and they threw 1 satchel charge in the tank retriever. and ruptured a fuel cell, and Retriever was gas. So it lit up and it burnt all night and half of the next day. And of course, when it burned and just warped, you know, you couldn't do anything. It's just a big chunk of steel. So then they called the engineers in, and they strapped explosives to it and blew it in place. You know, there were just little bitty chunks left. So, you know, I don't know. Go over there and find where they blew up that Retriever, and, you know, at least I could tell them where that some of their people were buried.
Have you ever been back?
No. At the reunion here, I think there was a flyer that they're talking about maybe some of the tankers going. So I might go to that. That's next year, I think.
So how many other men had your type of job at the time you were in country?
Well, in Charlie Company, I was the only mechanic for the whole company.
Was that standard one mechanic?
No. Yeah. So we did the best we could to keep all the vehicles, the 5 tons and the Jeeps and all that running. We hauled all the ammunition for the tanks and all that. When we had gone from Chulai, we went up on USS Whetstone, which is LST. Anyway, it's about 3 days going up, so it was like a nice cruise because, you know, you weren't sleeping in monsoon and in tents or on the ground. And so 3 days up to Fubai. So we got, on the Whetstone, yeah. So years later, I wondered what happened to that ship. So I looked it up, and it, of course, it had been, I think, decommissioned in 71. It was World War II, built the end of World War II, and it was mothballed, and they brought it back for Vietnam. So then I got on the internet, and I'm going there, and I found the ship's log on there. So I'm going through the log, and it said the date and everything, the time they picked us up, and that was it. Really interesting to me. At Fubai, we were just north, like I say, north of the airstrip. And we were, you know, tents on the ground for the whole time we were there. And the Army had a radio relay station set up across the road. And they were in air-conditioned trailers and had 6-foot chain link with barbed wire around the top. So our first sergeant was First Sergeant Slazak. He's about 6'6", big guy. And I think he knew everybody in the Marine Corps and everybody in the Seabees. So he came in one day. Seabees come in and dropped off a generator, big generator. And the Seabees came in and wired the tents. And then we were able to set up a mess hall and everything. But First Sergeant, of course, me being the mechanic, you're in charge of the generator. So I had to keep it running and keep it fueled. And so I'm get up at 6, start the generator, fuel it, and then shut it off at midnight. You know, worked on trucks and Jeeps during the day. Still stood guard. Finally, I told First Sergeant, I said, you know, you got to take me off of some of this, you know, because I'm not getting any sleep. And like I said, he knew everybody. So I guess for some reason he was able to get us in over at that radio relay station, the air-conditioned trailers and everything. So the cook would go over there every once in a while and make ice cream to bring back. So, you know, I drove the cook over there. So first time we go over there, and we go in into these trailers, and you know, I'm flak jacket and M14 and you know, just everything on. And so we're talking to the cook and their cook and our cook, and so they told me, says, yeah, you can go through that door, that's where the club is. So I swung the door open. Everybody in there is in civilian clothes. It's air conditioning and everything. and it was like the music stopped and everybody looked up. So that was interesting. Oh, then an unfortunate thing that when we went up there and we had gotten overrun that night, we spent another, I think, 2 weeks there. Camp Carroll was not called Camp Carroll then. It was called the Plateau. They named it Camp Carroll November 10th, 1966. And like I say, we were there, I think it was September. And so they were just setting up the Plateau, and Captain Carroll, I think there were 13 men. Captain Carroll, what they wanted to do is they wanted to take the tanks and they put them on ramps like that to shoot indirect fire. And they only did that a few times because they lobbed one shell in there and killed 13 of them, including Captain Carroll. So that was friendly fire. And like I said, they were so short of people. There were only two guys in that tank, and one was a truck driver. That next day, he was gone. I didn't know some protocol where they, you know, ship you out, or, but that was. But we heard about it. We didn't know who it hit, but then I found out later that they named it Camp Carroll. So.
How long did you say that you were in country?
13 months.
What was it like on your way, like your last few weeks there when you kind of knew you were about to go?
Well, was overrun, that was September, and I came back in November. After 2 weeks up at Cam Low, we decided we better not stay there, so we moved back down to Dong Ha. And there wasn't, it was just the airstrip at Dong Ha. We were one end of the airstrip and just some grunts up there. So we went back down there and we were able to set up a shop and everything in there. Well, when they put this matting on the runway, it was aluminum matting, and it overlapped, and it was about an eighth inch sticking up. And first time we landed a C-130, it almost tore the tires off of it because they were landing against those ridges. The CVs had laid them the wrong way. So then they had to come in, pull it all up, and turn it around. And so they had a lot of extra stuff. So I was able to, being the mechanic for the motor pool, I was able to get some of that matting, and we made a floor. So at least we had something solid to work on the vehicles on. And then we left. I rotated back November 66. It was basically you just sit there at the airstrip with all of your stuff. Helicopter come in, airplane come in, whatever. You run out there, you know, you going to Da Nang? So it took me 3 days to get to get out of there because it just wasn't much going. Everything was coming up north because they were resupplying. But like I say, when I got there, there wasn't much. And, well, in, like I say, we were in tents or on the ground or all the way up to the DMZ. Then I finally got back down to Da Nang, and it was like a big city. I mean, like, you know, these guys had barracks, air-conditioned trailers, and I'm going, you know, we've been up on the DMZ in the mud. So I went back down and reported back at headquarters company, and then they processed me, and I was able to fly out on, I think we flew on a Continental. When I flew over, we were one of the first units to fly, replacement units to fly over. And I went to staging battalion in September, which we had zero jungle training or zero training or anything. Because in March, they had just landed. So I got there in October. So they figured probably hadn't got anything set up at Pendleton yet. So we just did, like, you would go to staging battalion just to go overseas. So, you know, you got all your shots, you got all everything prepping to go. So we flew from El Choro up to Travis, up by San Francisco. Then we flew to Okinawa. And we spent 3 days in Okinawa, got more shots, had really no training. And then we flew down there from Okinawa down there. No, from the States, we flew on the same plane as military air transport, MATS. I think it was a C-120, no, not a C. Anyway, had no windows, and all the seats were facing the rear. I mean, it just stripped down inside. You know, I figured, well, it was facing the rear because they didn't want us to see where we were going. And so that was, I spent 3 days in Okinawa. Like I say, I got more shots. And so then went down, I got to Da Nang. Got to Da Nang, and we were on Hill 55 out southwest of Da Nang. That's where headquarters, 3rd Tanks, was. It was starting the monsoon season. And headquarters, I mean, they were just up on the hill and just concertina around it and didn't have really any bunkers or anything yet. It started to rain that first night, and I'm laying there, and the tent is kind of set on a hill, and the water's running down between, down between the tent. And I heard this rumbling. I said, "Damn, we can get a lot of rain. I hear a lot of thunder." And like I said, "That's not thunder. That's B-52s." Wow. So, you know, you learn as you go.
Were you in the Marines much long after?
Yeah, I still had two. Well, yeah, I still had 2 years left. So, get back November 66, stationed at Camp Pendleton, Las Flores, and they reactivated the 5th Marine Division. And so, when I got there, we had to go out to Supply Depot, which is Barstow, you know, get all the vehicles, and, well, tanks had to get all their tanks, and they had the M-60s. And so basic, we had all that to set up and everything. And beginning of 68, right when Tet started, they started needing more guys over there. So every morning in formation, the first sergeant say, "So-and-so, you come to the office." So, I mean, it was gone down to where there wasn't hardly anybody left. Yeah, so one morning, went into formation, first sergeant says, "Corporal Smith, Corporal So-and-so, come up to the office." So I said, "Hey, here we go." So went up to the office, and get up there, and the first sergeant said, "Well, we only need one of you. And who wants to volunteer?" So I told first sergeant, "I'm not volunteering." This kid said, "I'm not volunteering." I'd been, and he hadn't. But so anyway, first sergeant reached in his pocket, "I'm going to flip a coin." I said, "I don't like that idea, first sergeant." He said, "Wait a minute, I'll call over battalion headquarters S1. So he calls over, and he's kind of talking, shaking his head. He hangs up and told this kid, he says, "You're going." And that, I didn't think anything else about it. And one day I went over to pick up the colonel, battalion headquarters, and I had been there, well, over a year and helped set all that up. So I knew everybody. So the kid in S1, he says, "I saved your ass the other day." I said, "Why? What happened?" He said, "Well, first sergeant called over one to who to send." He said, "I knew you, but I didn't know the other guy, so I told him to send him." Wow. So I lucked out, and I was married, and my son was due that August of 68. But the guys that went over were only there about 4 or 5 months, and then they came home. So, they're the ones that made it.
What's the most common repair that you had to do on a tank? What was
on a tank?
Yeah.
Of course, they're always running over mines, blowing the track off, and I'd help them break track, put track back on, torsion wheels, road wheels. It's all heavy duty, heavy stuff. But there's ways to do it that it's. And then the vehicles were, had one kid, had one of the 5 tons that ran off in a ditch, and where the spring shackle went into the frame, broke all the rivets off of there, so didn't have any way to rivet it. So I was able to scrounge up some bolts, big bolts that size. Of course, I had to get those other ones knocked out and then pull that front axle back up where the holes would line up and get that bolted. So it was just whatever needed to be done. And back at Dong Ha, the tanks were out on patrol, and we lost a tank commander, Earl Matthews. He was a staff sergeant. They were out on a sweep. The NVA came up behind the tank, and he was standing up in the tank. The hatch was behind him, and the hatch was, 3 inches thick. Shot an RPG into the back of the hatch. And of course, it blew a hole, and we blow a hole into a 3-inch thick steel, it just cut him in two. Part of him went down in the tank, and part of him went off. So, I wasn't there, but when they drug the tank back and everything, I had helped clean it out and then go through all of his belongings and everything to send everything back to his wife. So,
what did you do when you got home?
Got married. Yeah. Got married, but I still had 2 years left in Marine Corps. So I went back to Pendleton, and that's when I went into the 5th Tanks. Okay. And a lot of guys that were there were guys that I was with over in Vietnam. So that's why I know so many tankers.
What did you do when you got out?
What did I do when I got out? I went to barber school and spent 53 years cutting hair. So, in my hometown.
Where's your hometown?
My hometown is in Olathe, Kansas. It's right outside of Kansas City. So I was born and raised there. All of my folks, my grandmother, and so just thought I'd go back there. And by then when I started barber school, I had the one kid and one on the way. So I ended up having three kids, and I have 9 grandkids. So,
wow.
And then all of my grandkids are, all but 2 of them are out of high school. That's probably everything, because I'd just be probably going back and forth repeating. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. This was my first time.